Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, January the 14th. Well, President Biden continues to be the topic in the country, and specifically the political problems that he's having. As we mentioned in our last podcast, his approval ratings just keep dropping. He's down to 33 or 35 in a couple of polls that came out. But the one poll that I follow the most, because there's a lot of different polls and they use a lot of different systems. As you may be familiar with polling data, there's three types of samples that the polling agencies will use. The first one is all adults, and that just means that. They simply sample adults. Then the other one is registered voters. That is a better list, but the problem with registered voters is that very often those lists are incomplete because a lot of voters change addresses and so on. And then the most reliable sample is what they call likely voters. And those are people who voted the last time and who tell you on the phone that they're going to vote again. And if somebody voted the last time, it's likely they're going to vote again. In other words, people who vote tend to continue voting. It's not perfect. It's not a perfect system, I know. And, you have to factor in, I suppose, a certain amount of deception in the information that people give you. But likely voters, that's the sample that most of the agencies really, it's a more expensive sample because you got to go through more discrimination of the voter information and all of that. But nevertheless, it is the most likely voters is the best sample. So the reason that I like Rasmussen reports is because their sample is a 3-day rolling average of likely voters. And I tend to like that one. It's very reliable. Well, they have President Biden today at 38%, which is not a very good number. Look, as I've said many times, when you're the president of the United States, obviously you want to be at 50 or better. Usually, if you're 50 or better, that's a very good sign that you're going to win. If you're an incumbent, regardless of the position, if you're 50 or better, you've got a pretty good chance of winning, of getting reelected, let's say. If you're between 47, 48, 49, if you're in the top 40s, you've got a chance. Let's say it's going to be tough, but you've got a chance. When you drop under 45 and when you drop under 40, that's very bad territory for any incumbent politician, senator, governor, whatever. If you're under 50% and you're in the low 40s, that's a bad number. You don't want to be there because what that tells you is that people, you're not going to get any new voters if you're already, they know who you are. So most of the voters have already made a decision about you, and that's the number that you're getting. So when you're at 38%, that's a very bad number that President Biden is getting. And that's, again, off of Rasmussen, the daily tracking poll that I follow the most. There's lots of polling data, and no one poll is perfect. So that's why I like the Real Clear Politics has like an average of the polling data. So, again, there's no perfect data, but I like Rasmussen because they've been pretty reliable. Let me take a quick coffee here. They're very reliable, and they use likely voters, so I like that. So he's at 38%. So what's the problem? Why is President Biden all of a sudden collapsed? Just totally collapsed in popularity or approval. Well, I think we saw a little bit of it this week, with the Supreme Court shooting down his mandates. He's been governing too much by mandates. That's a problem. We don't have a political system where presidents govern by executive orders or mandates. That's not the way we function as a country. Now, there are times, in times of war in particular, when the president can use an executive order to get something done as commander-in-chief. And the courts tend to give the president the benefit of the doubt at a time of war or when he's acting as commander-in-chief. They tend to give him a little leeway because they figured, hey, he's got some information that we don't have, so we're going to give him a little leeway. But most of the time, courts don't like it when presidents govern by executive orders. And as we told you, I remember a year ago when President Biden came in and he started signing one executive order after another, I said, and many smarter people than me said, all of these executive orders are going to end up in the courts. And that's exactly what's happened. He's written a bunch of them, and the more controversial ones, let's say the more consequential ones, have all ended up in the courts. And he's been losing one battle after another, whether it's deportations, whether it's the border with Remain in Mexico, and lots of others that he's been losing, simply because he doesn't have the authority to issue a mandate to the private sector saying a company with more than 99 or 100 employees has to do this or has to do that. He doesn't have that authority. And the court simply affirmed it yesterday. So you have a president who is not governing in a in a way that unites the country. He's governing in a way that divides the country. So what you get is a president with very bad approval ratings. And what else can I say other than that? Then, to top it off, you have a president who goes down to Georgia to sell his voting rights. It's not really voting rights. That's what they call it, but that's not what it is. And I'll talk about that in a minute. Not really voting rights. We have voting rights in the United States. What that law is all about is federalizing national elections. They want the federal government to run national elections, and that runs counter to our Constitution. Again, our Constitution gives the states the power to run elections, not the federal government. But anyway, President Biden goes down to Atlanta to give a speech talking about this particular voting rights. They call it voting rights, but it's not really about voting rights. I want to make sure that's clear. But he goes down there and he gives a speech. The speech was, pretty worthless, really, not anything significant. And then at the very end, he basically says that we have to make a decision whether you are with, Martin Luther King or George Wallace, whether you are with John Lewis or Jefferson Davis. I mean, that's an outrageous, completely outrageous thing to say. I mean, just completely outrageous, but he says it. And obviously that divides the country because there's one thing that people are sick and tired of in the United States. People are sick and tired of being called a racist every time they disagree with you. Every time there's a disagreement with the left wing of the Democrat Party, the only thing the Democrats do is to call you a racist. I'm saying, what's that all about? Why are they calling me a racist just because I disagree with them? If I feel that elections should be run by the states, which is what the Constitution says, why does that make me a racist? And so this is the other problem. When the president of the United States gives a speech and says something like that, basically calling everybody who disagrees with him a racist, well, that's not a good idea. That doesn't make any sense politically. You're the president of the United States. You're supposed to bring people together. You said you were going to bring people together during the campaign, and you've done the exact opposite. So this man is in serious trouble politically. Now, can he recover? Well, I'll never say never, but I doubt it. I doubt it. I think that he's in for an even more difficult year because now, as we mentioned the other day, the economy is going to go in an anti-inflation posture, and the Federal Reserve is going to shut down the economy to bring down inflation, and it's not going to be pretty. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. You know, the city of Baltimore, I lived in Baltimore in the late 70s. I went to college there, and I lived there. I got my first job out of college there. And the city of Baltimore here recently is probably the best example of a failure, of a city that has just completely collapsed. They're losing population. Nobody wants to do business there. The crime rates and everything are way high. They're losing police officers. It's horrible. It's a failure of a city. And now we learned that the state attorney, Marilyn Moseley, who's married, I think, to the president of the city council, both of them are in deep trouble over some loans that they made or falsifying some applications or whatever. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in Baltimore. I don't know how much longer a city can be run that way. It is a total disaster, the city of Baltimore. Everybody I know gets the heck out of Baltimore. When they had those riots back in 2015, the businesses that were burned down never came back. And the city continues to lose tax revenue because nobody wants to live there. The people I know all live in the suburbs. And one of these days, I don't know, one of these days the state of Maryland is going to have to take over this city and bring it back to life, because right now the city of Baltimore, a beautiful city in many ways, the beautiful Inner Harbor, I mean, great baseball team, great football team, great people who live in that area. The city has just been devastated by all these liberal politicians, Democrats, most of them. And the city is a failure. I don't know how else to say it, but that's what it is, a failure. And the system, the people running that city are very corrupt black Democrats. That's who they are. It's basically a black Democrat city run by black Democrats. And it's a very corrupt city. That's all I can tell you, very corrupt. And as I said, nobody wants to live there. And even the people who run that city don't necessarily live there. They send their kids to private schools and stuff like that because what a disaster Baltimore has become. So I'm hoping that maybe the governor of Maryland takes over that city and brings that city back to what it used to be. It used to be a pretty good-looking city, nice town, colonial-type architecture, lots of beautiful things, neighborhoods. But it's gone downhill, really, for the last 20 or 30 years. What a shame. Well, a couple of things on this day in history, back in 1973, the Miami Dolphins won the Super Bowl and thus completed a perfect season. They beat the Washington Redskins in the Super Bowl and then ended up the season 17-0. In other words, a perfect season. They won 14 games during the regular season and then three postseason games to finish 17-0. Nobody has come close to that. Now, a couple of teams have gone like 14-1. I think the Chicago Bears are 15-1. The Chicago Bears, 85-86. Here recently, the Patriots were actually 18-0, and then they lost the Super Bowl, so they ended up 18-1. So there have been a couple of teams that have come close, but no one's gone perfect like the 1972-73 Dolphins. So it's just a great story, an absolutely great story. The coach was Don Shula. Bob Greasy was the quarterback. They were just a very well-run team, and in many ways typical of the teams of that age, you know, the quarterback didn't throw for 50, you know, Bob Greasy, who was the quarterback, he might throw the ball 20 or 25 times, maybe 20 times in a game. Not like today where, you know, they throw 50 times or whatever. But anyway, a great football team, the Miami Dolphins. And on this day in 1954, one of the most, I guess, controversial weddings of the 1950s took place. Joe DiMaggio, who was already out of baseball, and Marilyn Monroe got married in 1954. It was a big, big wedding. The marriage lasted 274 days. I guess it just wasn't meant to be. But anyway, DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe on this day in 1954. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.